is a celery die. Extra!
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? It's Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true seller diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet...
What are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best. The cream of the crop, the creme de la creme. Sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die.
Let's welcome the great Nick Stepanovich. I want to ask you, what is the problem with salespeople today in general?
Ooh, I would say relevance is a problem. People... You know, there's a very strong sales focus around, I know this is good for you, or you look like other companies that I've helped. I know this is good for you. And there's not enough what's in it for me from a client perspective. There's not enough leading with insight. There's not enough solving problems. I think there's a lot of people pushing really, really great solutions that are looking for a problem as opposed to fixing people's problems.
Well, I have some additional information that I want to share with our diehards. You were a wrestler at Ohio State. Excuse me, the Ohio State University.
Yes.
Okay. And I am a proponent of salespeople who were athletes. And the reason I'm a proponent of it is because they're typically in shape, physically and mentally. They have a high desire to win. They're very competitive. They play by the rules, and they're coachable.
And disciplined.
Yeah, they're totally disciplined. So you already have those disciplines coming into the game. You're the leader. Are you looking for other athletes to be on your team, or what do you look for?
I do. I would love to have other athletes on the team. I have several associates who have played high-level high school or college sports. Similarly, we have people who have former military backgrounds. Wired very similarly as far as taking direction, discipline, wanting to win.
I agree with that.
Yeah. It's really important for me. You know, I think every sales position has some sort of ante to play, right? Like, you didn't get past the recruiting process and get to me if you didn't have basic skills that we need. But now that you're in the game, grit and coachability and cultural fit is really, really important. And I find that with athletes, especially, and people like military or even if you were high level in music, if you excelled in life at something outside of selling, those intangibles transfer so well. And I love that in an applicant.
Yeah, that's pretty important. And how do you train your guys right now?
I would say it's a combination. I'm very lucky. I work for a very large organization. We have a tremendous amount of tools. So we have every tool you could imagine as far as virtual tools, live tools. But me personally, I like to be with my people and show them what good looks like. And once I see them do it, then ask them to show somebody else. And it's, again, not to go back to sports this whole time, but when I was a kid, my dad would tell me, you know, I'm going to show you, you're going to do it, and then you're going to teach somebody. And if I can show an associate what good looks like and then watch them do it well and then give them autonomy and then put them in a position to teach somebody else, they've really kind of traversed that arc of mastering a skill.
Please help me welcome the one, the only, Mr. Google AdWord, Perry Marshall.
Well, so there's a setup story to the bleeding neck story. So my friend John, he hitchhikes to Las Vegas when he's 17 from Denver to Las Vegas, and he decides to become a professional gambler, okay? And he becomes part of a crime ring, basically.
Oh, how pleasant.
And after 3.5 years, and I got another story about that too, but after 3.5 years of this, he's sitting in a restaurant booth, and there's these two guys, and they're arguing. And one of them's like, yes, you will. And the other one, no, you won't. No, I won't. Yes, you will. No, I won't. And out comes a Glock, and the guy goes, yes, you will. And John is sitting across the table, and he's like, dude, if you don't get out of here, you're going to be dead, man. And so he left. And so he goes to Southern California, and he starts selling computer equipment in the defense industry. And he gets this boss, and the boss says, okay, John, he's got the stack of papers. He goes, I got 206 sales leads for you. And he goes, I want you to meet with every single one of these people, and I want you to book the business. Now, John's been gambling for the last 3 years, and he's like, there ain't no way 206 of these people are even worth meeting with, let alone gonna give me money. Like, are you kidding? like you got to be crazy. And so John came up with this thing called the five power disqualifiers. And they are the five things that are always true every time you sell anything to anybody at any time, which anytime you have like a list of five things and they're always true, man, you should pay attention, because it's pretty hard to come up with something that reliable. And so here's what they are: is number one, they have a bleeding neck. Okay, now what is that? Okay, well, you'll find out if you go to the emergency room with a broken arm, right, and you stumble in there and you tell the receptionist, I broke my arm. She's going to give you a clipboard, and you're going to sit down at this vinyl-covered seat, and there's going to be a stack of Good Housekeeping magazines
without,
and
covers.
Without covers, and you're going to, with your one arm that works, you're going to fill in all these forms, right? And then you're going to give it to her, and then she's going to say, "Have a seat," and then you're going to sit there for 2.5 hours while they deal with your emergency, right?
And okay. Check out your health card.
Now, yes. Now, but watch this. If a guy walks in with a gunshot wound and blood is squirting out of his aorta and splattering on the ceiling, they don't give him a Good Housekeeping magazine. They see him right away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a bleeding neck. People with bleeding necks buy things. People that only have broken arms don't. Hmm. Or people who are, you know, like, okay, people who just had a heart attack, they buy things. People who are going to have a heart attack, they don't buy anything. They don't exercise. They don't eat kale, you know.
No one
right?
eats
they
kale.
Don't,
dude, no one
I
eats
eat
kale.
Kale.
Yeah, girls eat kale.
Hey.
But who's going to buy a person with a bleeding neck? That's who's going to buy. And if they don't have a bleeding neck, they're not buying your stuff. So that's the first power disqualifier. Now what I got to say about this is most people think that sales is a convincing people business. No, it's a disqualification business. Sales and marketing are disqualified. Who doesn't have a bleeding neck? Who doesn't have, right? Who isn't going to buy? Get rid of them until only the buyers are left, and then you sell. And oh my goodness. And the next one, right behind it, the power disqualifier number two is, do they have the money? If they don't have the money, they're not buying. I can tell you, I can't tell you who will buy. I can tell you who won't. The people who don't have the money won't buy. Now, as simple as this is, like, if you guys could ride around with me in my rusty blue Toyota 1985 Corolla in the 1990s when I was trying to figure out how to sell, you'd be like, who is this moron? Right? You know, he spends an hour and a half with this engineer who can't possibly, you know, he doesn't even have a budget for this. And you're, hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. And I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff, right? He's not buying jack.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have anything, right? So they have to have the money. Number three, do they buy into your unique selling proposition? Well, most sales guys don't even have one, or they don't know what it is. Or like, it's like, okay, why should I buy this from you instead of every other guy in the whole world? And they don't have an answer. Like, well, why did you even get out of bed this morning? Like, so I could buy something from you that's exactly the same as these 12 other people? Like, why do you exist? And I know this sounds really mercenary. Look, I'm just telling you how the world is, right? You know, I wanted the world to be all like, you know, like Bambi or something. You know, no, the world is Bambi's mother. Like, boom, you're dead. You know?
I never pictured Bambi's mother as a murderer, but
I know. Draw that.
Well, she's draw not that. A murderer. No. She got murdered, right? Uh-huh. She got hunted down, right?
Yeah. Got it.
It's like, you know, Bambi's an orphan, like all the people in the orphan stories. Even Bambi is an orphan. The Lion King is an orphan. There's a lot of dead parents out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
This is really dark. I'm just sounding terribly dark today.
Yeah, well, it's actually pretty good, though. Your
lighting, this is great. What's number four?
Hold on. Your lighting is good, though. Don't worry.
Oh, you know what? I bought one of those lighting kits.
Oh, cool.
Well done.
An umbrella. There's actually an umbrella.
Well,
and a window.
That's good.
Who'd you get it from? B&H?
Amazon. So I guess I'm sorry. You know, I'm putting B&H out of business.
Yeah. No,
I just asked my
they're going to be fine.
I think they're
guy.
Okay.
They're going to be fine.
All right. So what's number four?
Number four is they have to have the ability to say yes. Most people you try to sell to have the ability to say no, but they can't tell you yes. Okay. So we're back to that engineer guy again. Like he could throw you out and you never get back in, but he can't approve the purchase order. He has to go to his engineering manager. He has to go to his whoever, higher ups, whatever. He can say no, but he can't say yes. Or like if you're selling to the husband, but the wife isn't there and it's like a kitchen, you're not selling that thing.
Duh.
Correct.
Duh. Right. Well, but I did that. Like I said, if you could ride around in my 1985 Toyota Rusty Corolla, which was light blue, and like you'd be like, why can't this guy figure out that if a husband and the wife aren't both there, it's not even worth going to the appointment? And I guess it's probably because I didn't have any sales leads and I wanted to do something, and I'd rather do something than nothing. So I guess there I am, selling to a guy that can say no but can't say yes.
But this wasn't just a problem of the 1980s or your problem. We have listeners, and it might be you listening right now out there.
You diehard.
Yeah, who has this exact same issue. It's like you don't want to be in a position where you're doing nothing. So you go talk to people, even though the people you're talking to are not the right people. They don't have the power to say yes. They don't have the money. They don't have a bleeding neck, and
they have
you're
to
talk to them anyway because you want to feel like you're being productive.
And they have to grace their daddy or their mommy if they can buy it. Daddy, well, can we get this?
Please.
So hey, if this is you, at least you can know that like there's only 3,800,000,000, you know, other salespeople that did the same stupid stuff.
So is number five a clincher of some kind?
It's actually really subtle. Number five is it fits their overall plans. Now, again, that might seem obvious, but how many salespeople don't even know their overall plans? Like, they listen to the whole kit presentation about like the new bathroom or something, and the guy's like, well, yeah, but we're moving to Las Vegas in October. So, you know, we can't buy a remodeling project. You know, oh no, we're not going to put a new roof on the house. No, we're not going to do siding. And you're sitting there like, well, why did the guy even listen to me for the last 30 minutes? Probably because you're more interesting than Seinfeld reruns.
He's joining us today because his group has released a study that he says debunks several myths about prospecting, and I can't wait to talk to him about it. Welcome, Mike. So anyway, let's talk about what you got, because I'm really interested in this, and it is pretty dynamic, but I'm going to let you tell the story rather than me tell you what I read.
Okay. So we wanted to find out what was actually happening in prospecting. Like I said, it was changing. It was changing so much that we didn't think what we had was helping enough, so we pulled it off the market. That was years ago. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to find out what's actually happening. Going back to when I started selling, that time when I said, hey, boss, do you mind if I pick up the phone and try to sell? It was me, a telephone, a desk, a written directory that I had to flip through to find people's names, and a ticking time clock with nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. If I really wanted to get snazzy and sophisticated, I might type a letter and do a mail call, and you could go to the bookstore and find out 21 direct mail and sales letters that work. And that was pretty much all there was.
No, you forgot one thing. You had to have a mirror so you could see when you were smiling.
Oh, yeah, because you want to smile before you dial. You want to smile and dial. Well, that has changed a ton. There are a number of different how people consume information has changed, how people reach out has changed, whether or not they want to even hear from the phone has changed. Cold calling is dead has been one of the most popular article titles for the last 15 years. Well, is it dead and is it not dead? And let's find out what's actually working. So that's what we wanted to do. So we wanted to look at the seller side and say, for those of you that are prospecting and having the most success, and we define the success as for every 100 targets that you're going after, how many meetings are you setting? Mm-hmm. Do those meetings have good quality outcomes? And from the initial meeting, and do you have a higher win rate or close rate of those sales than the others? So we figure if you're getting meetings, you're getting good meetings, and they're turning into business, that's probably a good indicator you're a top performer in prospecting. So we studied 488 sellers across 26 industries selling. About two-thirds of it was in the Americas, and about a third was from APAC and Europe. But we didn't want to study what sellers said. We also wanted to study what buyers, who are sold to all the time, mid-level and senior-level buyers at mid-size and larger organizations. We studied 488 buyers responsible for $4.2 billion in purchases across 26 industries around the world. And we also wanted to study, is it different when you are a buyer that's a manager level or a director level or a C-level and vice president level? So we took those two studies and we mashed them together, and we found out, at least from what's working from the sellers and what it's like for the buyers, and who do they give meetings to and who do they dismiss in 2 seconds, saying I'm never going to talk to them in my life because of how they reached out. So what is actually happening here? We found out some fascinating stuff, and there's a story to be told about what's actually working for both sellers and buyers together. It's pretty fun.
Cool. So give me a couple of revelations.
One of the most cited sales statistics is something like 57% of the buying journey is done before the seller even gets involved, or 67% of the buying journey is now done on the internet. So what that's telling sellers is, they don't want to talk to me, and I shouldn't be calling them early in the process, and I should wait until there's a felt need and they reach out to me or my marketing department, because everyone says inbound marketing is the way to go, and I should be able to just handle that need and sort of take it to the win. Well, we asked the buyers, when do you most want to hear from sellers? Do you want to hear from them at that time, which would be when you're identifying and evaluating potential providers? Do you want to hear from them earlier in the buying process, when you're looking for new ideas and possibilities of what to do, or when you're actively trying to solve a problem and are not sure what path to head down or how to solve it? It turns out that most buyers want to hear from sellers as early in the sales process as possible. So as much as all the statistics have been telling you, oh, they don't want to talk to you, all the buyers that told us said, yeah, well, I prefer to talk to them early. 71% said they want to talk to them at the very earliest time in the buying process when they're looking for new ideas. And it was closer to 50% in the middle of the process. They were talking about identifying just who the providers could be because they knew what they wanted. And only about 30% said they wanted to talk to sellers around the time of a request for proposal. Like they build their own proposals and then send them out for people to respond to.
So they want to talk to you early,
here's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is we ask these same buyers of these early meetings, how many of them are valuable to you? Only 42% said that the early meetings were valuable, which means that 6 out of 10 of these buyers believe the sellers are not doing a good job in these meetings. So they want to talk to sellers. And when they actually do talk to them, sellers suck.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's an opportunity for sellers who are identifying and targeting the buyers that could be great buyers for their offering and doing well in these initial meetings. There's a gold mine to be had for these folks.
This has been a Seller Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher. And come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.